So this is a modern map showing you where everything happens in Antwerp. And this was, at this time, the most prosperous harbour of the Northern Europe. Between Antwerp, here there is Leuven, and that's the place of the first trilingual university, the three languages that were requested by Erasmus for a new scholarship. So you can guess that these three languages are not English, French and German, but that's Latin, Greek and Hebrew, because we need to read the Bible and we don't need to read anything else at this time. Up there, we can't see it. There is Leiden, and it's in between these two universities that we'll have our adventure. This map was printed by Plantin and designed by Ortelius and shows you how it stood in the 16th century. So first, you see much more water in Holland than what you would see now, because the polders hadn't been done yet. And you see also that Antwerp had a large delta. That's the Escu, the river going there. And after the separation of the Low Countries between the Netherlands and Belgium, the Dutch engineers had the good idea of diverting the river so that the harbour is nearly dry. And that's the beginning of Amsterdam as a great harbour. So Antwerp, at this time, is a very prosperous city without a university, as you notice, with many merchants, and also with fortifications. That will not help Antwerp a lot during these religious wars. First, it's invaded by the Spanish troops, and the Spanish troops hadn't been paid for the last 4 years, so they decided to take their pay on the inhabitants. But also, between 1580 and 1584, it was besieged by the Spanish troops. So there was a famine inside. It was a republic, a Protestant republic, for this brief time. And the Plantin stayed there during this time. Much more peaceful is the fate of the Catholic University of Louvain, which is now in Belgium, and which was founded in 1517 to teach Latin, Greek and Hebrew to future priests and seminarists. It was not founded, but it was inspired by the thought of Erasmus, and it was supposed to be the modern university of Europe. Very quickly, there was a problem, though, in this Northern Europe, is that people who weren't Catholic had nowhere to go to. So William the Silent, after the siege of Leiden and his victory over the Spanish troops, decided to found a new Calvinist university in Leiden. That was a small town, and they had many churches, so it was easy to deconsecrate one, which is the case, and have the library installed there. So we have these two, I would say, sister universities. One is Catholic, that's Leuven, or Louvain, and the other one is Protestant, that's Leiden. Well, Christopher Plantin had two son-in-laws. He asked one to look after the workshop in Antwerp and print everything for the Leuven profs and students. That's Johannes Moretus. And the second one moved to Leiden. That's Franciscus Raphaelangius. And he printed everything for the profs and students of Leiden. It was a very interesting job, actually, because he was an Orientalist. And the Oriental studies were starting at this time in Leiden. So he's the first printer to print in Arabic, for instance. He knew Hebrew very well, and is very well known for his own scholarship on these Oriental languages. So here is our man. He is depicted here by Goltius, who is another of these people, you know, saying that they are Catholic and having many Protestant friends and printing forbidden books. Goltzius is an engraver, and he represented his friend with the hands loaded with symbolism. First, one hand is on a book. It's not any book, it's actually the Bible. Christophe Plantin had received a commission from Philip II of Spain, the very Catholic king, to print a Bible in several languages. If you want to be snob, which I like sometimes, you say the polyglot Bible. Polyglot meaning in many languages, and it means Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, of course, but also Aramaic, which is even better. And so this Bible was very difficult to put together, especially when people were attacked by troops not being paid and by their neighbors being of the other religion. Still, it was published in 1572, and it's one of the most beautiful achievements of humanist scholarship in the 16th century. The other hand, he's holding this compass, and this is the device, meaning the signature of the printing shop of the Plantin. The two legs have two different names. One is labor, so harsh work. And the other one is constantia, meaning patience, perseverance, endurance, faithfulness, everything you want to put in being constant. Okay, and that's what we'll find on every book printed by Plantin, but also by his heirs. Here it is. So you recognize here this compass, and what matters is the balance between the two legs. This is his first printer's device. This will be the device of Johannes Moretus, and I'm sorry for the quality of the photographs. Daniel was often there, and also I love these books, so I didn't want to press them open to have a nice photograph, so took it as I could. And you see that still here we have these two allegorical people. So she's the church, easy. I'm not sure who is the man holding the shovel. It's a little sinister. We'll talk about that again. Okay, so the first of our books, the first three ones actually, are from the Segers collection. And they are, I mean, the big folios of theological stuff. Serranus, who is writing two commentaries in two books from the Old Testament, is not very well known, except that he's Spanish and Catholic. And there is nothing to say about this first volume, I would say, except if Sophia wants to contradict me, and you can, except that it's very well done and it's very boring. But beautiful typography. So if you look here, you see here a little hybrid animal. You see the buttocks here, the legs jumping, and we'll see many of these beautiful. And you see here, sorry, the hunter blowing his horn. The second one, and you won't be surprised, it's again in the Segers collection, is Summa Theologiae by Thomas Aquinas. There are in the Segers collections more than 38 editions of this book. And I suspect that there are some more later, published later than 1800, so I haven't tracked them all. And maybe not with the exact same title, because it depends if you put Theologiae with I together or A and E separate. Why? Well, first because Thomas Aquinas is the official thinker, and he's the guide for the doctrine of the Catholic Church. But even more so for Segers and the first bishops of Victoria, because it's in 1893 that the Pope officially recognized the Thomism as the official doctrine of the Catholic Church, which asked for, again, new commentaries and new editions. In this edition, we recognize, you know, the typical setting of pages for theological treatises. It's a huge in-folio. It was meant to be chained to the bookshelf so that you stand and read it there. You don't bring that home. And you see that this is the little title, and this is the commentary. You have in the margins all the references to the Bible books, to the fathers of the church, and to the different authorities. Okay, so now it starts to be interesting. In this book, there were two little slips of paper. So one is in Latin, and I don't know exactly what it means. It's notes taken like that. The 157 and the 140 can be page numbers. They can be line numbers. And I looked a little around, couldn't find it. The second one is very nice. The second one here shows that the subtitle shows that it comes from a book, from the catalogue of a book sale. And this book sale was to be held in October 1886. It's very moving because in November 1886, Charles Segers was to be assassinated in Alaska. So, yes, it's a stretch, but we can imagine that it's the last book sale where he put bids so that we do have now in Victoria this wondrous collection. I looked at the various catalogues that we do have on Google Books. These things are not protected by copyrights. And this is a catalogue from Ghent, the native town of Charles Segers. And it was full of Catholic books. So I can't say for sure, oh, that's where he bought this or that. Next item is maybe the best looking item we do have. And that's the only item where we couldn't give the title in the catalogue because we couldn't print ancient Greek in the new publisher or InDesign software. So first, this is a book which is assigned to an author who is not the author, with a title which is not his title. So now, that we've sorted it, let's say that it's the commentary of a book called Physiologus, which is supposed to have been written by a father of church. And let's decompose all that. A Physiologus is a book telling you about the secret meanings of all animals. For instance, you've seen deers growing antlers and losing them. You haven't thought of it, but there is a secret meaning here. This is a message sent by nature and God to tell you that innocent animals grow the wood of the cross because they think of it, they feel it, but then they are redeemed by the sacrifice of Christ and they lose the antlers. So every Christian is like the deer, growing, feeling compassion for the Christ and also feeling redeemed by his sacrifice. And this is why the deers love to drink pure water, because true Christians love to be baptized. Okay, so that's the basic. You have 24 animals. There are crocodiles who pretend to be sad. There are birds and, I mean, all kinds of snakes. Little rats and things like that. So now, this Physiologus was a huge bestseller and was developed into bestiaries in the Middle Ages. I won't go in there, otherwise you'll be there tomorrow. But what we do have is that it was too long and too complicated. So people summarized this. And they thought, also, it's not like nice looking. You have this, all this Greek, nobody understands. You translate it into Latin, but you still have to look at it. So they put pictures, which is much better. So now we have a second tradition with lovely pictures, some Greek, not a lot, and a lot of explanation in Latin. And then they thought, yeah, but who wrote that? We need an authority. And they thought that this Epiphanius, who had written something about the Palm Sunday, was not a bad name, and he was obscure enough so that it's probable. And here it is. So now, somebody needed to put all that together for the printer to give it to the press, and he's called Gonzalez Ponce the Spanish man. We don't know what else he has done, but we do have the letters he sent to Plantin, correcting the first the galley proofs and so on. This book has been absolutely, totally digitized and put on the website of Jøvik Libraries. So if you go on the website of the libraries, you'll find it on the digitized project. It hasn't been translated though. So it's full of pictures and it's a very small book. You look at it, so it's as if, you know, it's the most ugly from the outside and the best looking from the inside. So this is Epiphanius that you recognize and it's all written in Greek. But then I chose two pictures to show you. The first one, you see here, you have birds. It's the story of a bird called the Caradrius. We don't know exactly which bird it is. But this is a bird who likes to go and sit at the feet of people who are sick. So here we are in the hospital. You have two beds, two birds sitting at the feet of the sick people. If they look at the face of the person, this person will live. If they look away, like this one, no hope. Because this bird is actually sent by Jesus. And as you all know, if Jesus looks at the virtuous people and saves them forever, he doesn't look at the sinners, that's here, he's looking the other way, and the sinners are lost forever. And it's explained, of course. That's, I wouldn't have recognized that. And I thought it's a good idea to keep the windows closed, actually, if we are sick, because that would be terrible. The second one is the two elephants that I really like. And it's the setting of the book, you'll see it in the exhibition, is like a little enigma. So first you look at the picture, and you should try and imagine how to make sense out of it. Then you have the Greek, then you have the Latin explanation. Well, this one I wouldn't have guessed. So that's a she elephant, that's a he elephant. And they are in a lovely garden, that matters. She's giving him some mandragore, which will get him aroused. And of course you've understood that she is like Eva in the paradise, giving the apple to Adam. And then they will conceive in the sin. And so here we are. That's always Eva starting the downfall. I wouldn't have guessed that from there. But that shows how clever this Epiphanius was. This is the last of our books printed by the father, by Christophe Plantin. And we are now looking at books printed by his sons-in-law, and first by Johannes Moretus. This is a little book that has been stolen somewhere. And as you see, this is the title page. There were two stamps from the library. And so with a little cutter, the stamps were removed. We have many of them in the Seger's collections. And at this time, I think that booksellers weren't very careful about that. But you can find on eBay separate leaves of books showing up, so it hasn't changed too much. This is a book written for high school students who are going to read Latin tragedies by Latin classical authors. It's written by a friend of the best author and friend of the Plantins, Eustace Lipsius, and this friend is Martino Del Rio. People who came here for the first lecture remember a big textbook for inquisitors, saying what is good magic, what is bad magic. That's the same man. He had just been, he had just decided to join the Jesuit orders when he wrote this book, and it's supposed to explain to high schoolers how to make sense of a pagan author. So heavy commentaries, heavy annotation, and explanation of the difficult parts in Latin. Of course, it's printed for the Louvain side of the family and not for the Leiden one. Still, beautifully printed. And we come now to the smallest and most interesting, I find, book of the collection. That's the other son-in-law, and that's Franciscus Raphaelangius. We do have a portrait because in 1615, a young student from the University of Leiden decided to immortalize his profs. Listen to that, 524. So he decided to go and interview all the surviving ones, but also to list all the dead ones, have engravings done, and he called that Athens of the Holland, Athens in Holland, literally. And it's also called Icons of Scholars Who Taught in the University of Leiden. And he included the printer for all these scholars, so that Franciscus Raphaelangius. And this is the book he printed. So this is the Thomas Aquinas, to give you, and just close to it, I put the Apuleius. Now, Apuleius is an author of the late antiquity, and he is an interesting one for Protestants and reformers. Why? Because he was accused of magic, unjustly, and he wrote an apology of his own life, and also because he wrote a wonderful novel called The Golden Ass, which is about a student who, instead of studying, looks by the keyhole at his landlady and becomes an ass, so a donkey, and looks for redemption. So it's easy also to think that when you obey to your bodily instincts, you become an animal and you need the revelation of God to be saved. But also, it was a very good book if you wanted first to interest students. But also, it was a very good book to teach about Aristotle. There was an anonymous translation of a lost treatise by Aristotle called De Mundo, meaning about the world, and it was supposed to be the short and concise summary of all the other books. So, good deal. 50 pages instead of 50 volumes. Problem is that we had no author for this compilation. So, it was attributed to Apuleius, and one of the oldest manuscripts of this little summary is in the University of Leiden. And it was the property of Bonaventura Vulcanius, a professor there, so you won't see that. Here he is. Still in Athens of Holland, the collection of pictures. And he decided to teach. He was the professor for Greek and Latin, to teach every year the De Mundo by Apuleius. One of his students, called Petrus Colvius, decided to publish it, to edit it, with the printer for the university, Raphaelangius, and he offered it to his prof, saying, "Everything I know from your class," and so on. It was a great success because it was required readings for another 15 years. And so we have this very short, very small, short volume that you can bring outside of the library, put in your pocket and attend class with it. And that's the only student's text that we have in the collection. Very different material, and as you'll see, non-representative. Next item is an interesting one. It comes from the library of the minor orders in Nijmegen, which has still now a Catholic university in the south of the Low Countries. And first it was in the library of the minors, the minor brothers, meaning the Franciscan brothers, in Hoogmoed in Holland. It's the compendium of the decisions and the catechisms decided during the Trent Council. So the Council of Trent is the official reply of the Catholic Church to Reformation. It was convened from 1545 to 1563, and the decisions that were made there are the quintessence of Catholicism as defined precisely to answer the Reformation. So you can guess that it's the Louvain Antwerp Catholic side of the office. Next volume is maybe the most touching one. It's the first tome of the works of Justus Lipsius. Justus Lipsius is the best friend of Christophe Plantin and his best author. He is one of these wonderful scholars who are very difficult to understand for our own minds. Started off as a Catholic and then found a position at the newly founded University of Leiden, discovered that he was Calvinist when he accepted it. But then in 92, went back to Louvain, where he had been teaching first, and so discovered that, after all, he was a Catholic. And during all this time, he kept publishing with the Plantins. So when he was in Leiden, he was publishing with Raphelagius. When he came back to Leuven, he went publishing with Moretus. This is published by Moretus, but the first publication of all these works was done by Raphelagius. This book was in the library of the Company of Jesus, meaning the Jesuit order, in Aast, in Flemish Belgium. And I want to say just a word about that. Justus Lipsius was a star professor. It's like, David Suzuki right now. So, you know, the modern discipline, philology, Latin, Greek, and Hebrew at this time, that was, you know, the modern science. But also he was well known, and he was maybe one of the best known people in Europe. And he decided to use this name to help his printer. How did he do that? Well, he gave the printer, so first Christophe Plantino, and then his heirs, so the Moretti, the two Johannes, and then Balthazar will take it over, the privilege, the exclusivity of publishing his works. And he managed to obtain from the King of Spain the official license of printing his works only with this printing shop. It seems to be a lot of paperwork, but when you think that there is no copyright and that the only way a printer is making money is by selling copies, and that there are very skillful pirates all over Europe, this is a nice gift that he gave to them. And in all the books printed by the Plantins that we have here, there is this little note saying, because of my friendship with Plantin, whom I miss now, and that I transmit to his sons and heirs, I grant privilege for them to print my works. This is the favorite ornated letter of Erin, and she likes it because here you can see that it was used quite a lot, and the woodblock was worn out. Okay, Search by Keyword is one of my favorite books of the Segos collection. That's a concordance of the Bible. Well, imagine that you're a devout Catholic, so you read the Bible only in the authorized versions, meaning not French, not English, but Hebrew, Latin, and Greek. So let's say that you read it in Latin, and you're looking for something. For instance, oh, you remember that there was this story with a vine close to a fountain, but where is it? Well, this is the search tool. So it's an index by keyword. And you see that we have a keyboard of little bookmarks to navigate through the letters. This concordance is also very interesting. So that's part of the Segos collection because of two features. First, this. This is a manuscript, ink, drawing, and inscription. The inscription is the motto of the Order of the Dominicans. And the monks who did this concordance were Dominicans. But even better, so that's the beautiful setting of that. And that's how it looks when you don't have a computer. Even better is that at the end, we do have a choir, meaning, you know, like a set of leaves sewn together with a manuscript. And this manuscript gives the preface of another edition of the same concordance. So that means that somebody took the time to copy the preface from an edition that we don't have, and which wouldn't have been a plantain, so we are pleased to have that. And at the beginning, you see it's so neat that you could believe that it was intended to be seen, but that's the end, and it's looking, you know, more and more floppy. So that's the book, so that's the end. This text is explaining on which version of the Bible the concordance was made. And it's also an important text because it says that without scholarship, we don't understand what the words means, and then we can have bad indexes for the Bible. And it comes from this edition. And so we do have here a very interesting name, which is Hubertus Fallesius. And that's the name of this Flemish monk, and we are back to Flanders, who edited a medieval concordance. He was a Benedictine monk in Afflingham, here, personal archives. So, the next book is the Rubens one. We do have, as the two last items of this mini collection, two small books, beautiful, white binding, extraordinary decoration, and very interesting story. First one is a book by Maciej Kazimierz Sarbiecki, and I can't pronounce that. I can in Latin, Matthias Casimirus Sarbievus. And he is, as you all know, the best known poet of the 17th century. I felt awful that I had never heard his name, but everywhere, and there is a huge bibliography on this man, he is called the Sarmatian Horace. He wrote poems that are actually quite funny, if we had known of it, someone should translate that into English. He wrote poems that he dedicated to all the important people, and he toured Europe, so dedicating his poems to popes, cardinals, mayors, generals, noble people, and so on. But the thing is that each poem is the parody of a classical poem. So that wasn't bad. He was a personal friend of Balthazar Moretus. And this is the engraved title page that we do have, so meaning that it was done specially for this book. I was very happy because, first, this is beautiful. So you see Apollo giving the lyra to up the three bees of the Pope Urbano VIII, who was the Pope of the time, or to here, the book, just newly born, of Sarbievsky. If anyone knows who is this goddess wearing laurel and looking nice, I've never seen Apollo paired with Demeter. It cannot be Artemis, the hunter goddess. And I would be quite interested in finding what. So you see that it's printed in Antwerp. And then, surprise, it's printed in Antwerp and it's signed Peter Paul Rubens. So yes, Rubens was at this time giving ideas for designs and designs for title pages to Balthazar Moretus. There was an exhibition in Antwerp about that. They had 9 title pages. They think that that's all, but they didn't have this one. So at least there is a tense, and this is in our collections. The next book is also very good looking. That's an in-folio of Tacitus. Tacitus is a classical Latin historian and is a very big favorite in Northern Europe because he's the only Latin historian who was interested in Germans. And it was difficult, you know, in this culture, everything is Roman and Greek. Well, but if you're German, where do you find your roots there? Well, have Tacitus. And of course, that's the edition given by Justus Lipsius. This book has several interesting features. First one is that we know when and by whom it was bought. It was bought in Rome. And in the Seger's collection, we have at least 6 books now with this little sticker saying that it's bought in the bookshop of Luigi de Romanis. And we can say with, I would say, 98% of certainty that Charles Segers bought them when he went to Rome in 1883. He wrote to the Sisters of St. Anne, saying, be good even if I'm far away, and so on, and said, I'm buying books right now. And thanks to Mikey King, could read this letter. The other thing that I wanted to show you is how to write a good letter. That's the end of the preface. And the name of the author of the preface is down the page. So you could think that it's a waste of good blank space, but no, it's the way he has to show that he is humble and he's so low that he creeps at the bottom of the page in awe of his dedicatee. That's part of the book, and that's a beautiful photograph by Patrick. And another one, I think it's you, or it's me, I can't remember, of a fleuron. So that's the way all the chapters are ended. Not 2 of them are identical. Last book that we have is a book by another Jesuit Latin poet, but he wasn't as well known as Sarbievsky. And I hope that you will remember that the greatest poet of the 17th century is Sarbievsky. So this one is Van der Waal, and he is a man who spent most of his life as a prefect of studies, meaning an inspector of the ministry, in Jesuit schools in the Low Countries. So he wrote many poems for other people. So, you know, for instance, Sarbievsky publishes his book and there is a dedicatory poem of Van der Waal saying, what a good book it is you're going to read. And he published only 1 book and he published it with Balthasar Moretus, and it was reprinted 4 times. My best guess is that it's a perfect prize book. It's a book of Latin poetry about Christianity and how to be a good student. So perfect. And on the very same day, the year of the first publication, in our book, we do have this little sticker. It's a sticker saying that it's a book given as a prize to Donato Ackerboom, who is going to be a monk and write concordances, by the rector of the new Latin school in Amsterdam, who is Adrianus Junius, but I can't find him. Ah, yeah, here he is, Adrianus Junius. And so the very same year it was published and it was given as a prize. So these books, for at least a quarter of them, were part of the Seghers collections. And this is a photograph of the collection. And they show something which is quite noticeable if you look at the repartition of these books in this collection. They show the great, tenderness, the great preference of this collection for the Low Countries. Many of these books are printed in Belgium, either Louvain or Mechelen Malines, which is a center for Catholic publishing, Brussels, and then much later, Italy and France and whatever. So what we do have is a library for counter-reformation, and this is why we do have these plantings, the catechism and the concordance and the commentaries and the Thomas Aquinas. But also what we do have is, so that's the commentary of Aquinas, what we do have in this collection is the nostalgia for the collection that was the seminar's library in the American college where Charles Seghers was trained. So he brought to Victoria not only the memory of his training, but within his training, the memory of the tradition of the 16th century. We do have, and I'll show that briefly to you, some, this is beautiful, isn't it? That's Vigus, and he's commenting Aquinas. We do have in this collection much more recent Belgian books. I'll go very quickly to them with you, showing you all this Van Oberke, that's always the same printer in Louvain, and is a Catholic printer for the Catholic University. I'll go very quickly now. What we do have here, and particularly with the most recent books, is a personal nostalgia of the first priest who came from this American college to the west coast of British Columbia. We do have one small, very small book, which is a New Testament, who was the property of Joseph Le Terme, who taught for 16 years in St. Louis College in Victoria. And we do have all his library in the Seghers collection. And this book was what we call interfoliated. So that's a 1704 book. And every second page, well, double page, leaf, is blank. And it was left like that so that he could take notes during his classes and comment on the Gospels. So we do have this in the Seghers collection. We also have books that belonged to Bertram Orth, who was Bishop of Victoria from 1900 to 1909. And this is a very recent one, 1860. We also have my favorite, belonging to Le Terme, a book called Stérilité des Missions Protestantes. So, unfertility on Protestant missions, because the great enemy wasn't so much the paganism or the impiety, but exactly as in the 16th century, the Protestant brother, so heresy. This book belongs to Leroy, another priest who was recruited by Demers, and it's a beautiful book by Beccano. Beccano is the theologian who was looking for the language that was spoken in paradise. Beccano was Flemish, and he discovered, you'll be quite surprised, that Adam and Eve were speaking in Flemish. So, and that's in there. We also have the Acta Sanctorum, which is the life of saints ordered by days of the year. I can't resist showing you this beautiful title page. You see down here, this little angel is taking the book out of the hands of time, and time is devouring his own children, and he's also killing them with the sight. At the top of this beautiful page, no, on the sides, you have scholarship, erudition, who is coming back from antiquity. She's coming back to Antwerp. And on the right side, you have the truth with her mirror. And she's also, she has the light brought not by a cupid, by here, by an angel. This is the church. And you see that she has little helpers. These ones are taking all the books with the names of the months. So that's the month of April. And that's January. And this is the science of the saints here that we have. And on the other side, I don't know what they are bringing, but they help her too.